You may have seen 69%. You may have seen 72%. By either of those two most recent measures, Oregon is at or near the bottom of all the states in its high school graduation rate, which is not good in any circumstance, but even more confounding in a state that aims for something called 40-40-20 for the percentages of people who get four-year college degrees or more, the ones who get two-year degrees or certificates, and the ones who stop after high school. Either way, it assumes a 100% high school graduation rate, and that's not in reach at the moment. From the Oregon Education Investment Board, OEIB, Nancy Golden joins us. She's the Chief Education Officer of the state of Oregon and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Nancy, thanks for being here today.
My pleasure.
I note some differences in numbers and timing. What's the rate that you're working with? Is it the 72% or the 69%?
It's the 72%, which is Oregon's most recent rate as of 2013-2014. The discrepancy is because the data that the federal government was using was from the 2012-2013. So they have a lag in when they report in the most recent data. So 72% is actually where we're at.
All right. So for 2013-14, it's just that this most recent report that came out was dealing with the 2012-2013 school year?
Yes. Okay. You've got that correct.
All right. So that's why it looks like it looks even worse. At 72%, does Oregon at least get off the absolute floor?
Well, yes, the absolute floor. But, you know, we certainly are not happy with where we are, and we're really trying to transform. We are transforming our system so that we really can meet that 40-40-20 goal.
So there's no particular relief, obviously, at nudging up by 3%. But, Nancy, can you give us some idea of the historical set of figures where Oregon has tended to fall in percentages and in relation to other states?
Yeah, you know, I don't actually have that data right now. So, you know, all I can do is report where we're currently at. But I think what's important for people to know is that part of our rate is due to there's not an apple-apple comparison between states. As much as the federal government is trying to get apple-to-apple, they don't have it. So to give you some examples, many states count what we have as a modified diploma. We also have students who have met their high school qualifications, but they stay a fifth year to get support in their transition to college. Other states count that. We have taken the conservative route and not counted that. Other states count GED, and we don't count those. So one thing we're really working on is to make sure we're apple to apples with other states when we report our graduation rate.
All right. So Oregon, it sounds like, pretty much prunes away everybody but the people who graduate with their class in 4 years?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. We just do not count some things that other people, that other states do. So
right.
We do look, yes.
I'm glad you brought up the GED because I had a question about that as well. So in other words, if even if you graduate in 4 years, but within that four-year period you opted to go for the GED instead of graduating the usual way, even that doesn't count toward Oregon's graduation rate.
Right, right. And, you know, the GED is aligned now with the Common Core standards. It really does. People who take the GED seriously will have the skills to go to be college and career ready. So we need to start working to account that, like many other states.
So, Dr. Golden, what would you say are the major factors in the lag? What are some of the major issues that present themselves to Oregon students that keep them from graduating on time?
Yeah, so, you know, the first thing is I think we were operating in silos. We didn't have a seamless system of education. That is at the heart of what used to be the Oregon Education Investment Board and now is the Chief Education Office is working on. So when we look at ourselves, that every people in higher ed are committed to students ready for kindergarten and vice versa, and everybody's working on the seamless pathway for all students, I think that's really, really going to make a difference. And so the other thing is that, you know, a piece of legislation we did, the policy we passed, was our equity lens. So we have a lot of students in an opportunity gap because the system hasn't supported them the way they need to. So with our equity lens, every time we make a strategic investment or a policy, we ask ourselves things like, how are the racial, ethnic, and underserved groups affected? What's the potential impact on resource allocation and strategic investment? So we're really focused on those kids that really do need much more support. And then another main focus of the Oregon Education Investment Board is, I mean, of the chief education office now, is barrier busting. And, you know, there's multiple ways that we do bust barriers. One, of course, is being aware of them. And two is making investments that will really bust the barrier and make a smooth pathway. So some of the investments we made this last session is we invested early. So we have legislation that made a historical investment in early learning. And what we all know is that if we have our students, you know, this is long term, you can do things short term, but if we have our students coming to kindergarten ready to learn, they're really on a pathway to be proficient readers in third grade. And we know that there's so much money put towards remediation after third grade, really across the state. We could save millions of dollars if we just start early. And so I think that investment that Governor Brown supported as a priority and legislators made in the long run is going to make a difference. In the shorter run, we also invested in what we refer to as student engagement. That's our career technical ed programs and our science, technology, engineering, and math programs. What we know is, first of all, there's a lot of high demand, high wage jobs in that area, and it also gets students to have hands-on experience as early is mid-school with applied learning, and a lot of our students do learn better if they have implied learning. And the third key area we invested in is our network for quality teaching and learning. And what we know there is the single greatest factor affecting student success are the educators who work side-by-side with our students. So we're making sure that educators have mentors to help them, particularly in their first 5 years. We're providing support to low-performing schools, and we're making sure everybody understands assessment literacy, what tests are students taking, what are they doing, how do when we get results and students aren't on track, we provide the support they need. We also, for our English language learners, invested $10 million that's going to go to the field to really make sure we support our kids who are learning a second language, so that they can make progress in get out of needing extra support, so that by the time they're in high school, you know, they're in all regular classes. And our data is showing that that's making a tremendous amount of difference. So we are putting in place huge systemic changes in order to really increase our graduation rate and meet that 40-40-20 goal.
Nancy Golden is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the Chief Education Officer of the State of Oregon. We're talking about Oregon's low graduation rate, 72%, and what is being done to address the issues there and bring up the performance of students in the State of Oregon. Join us on the Exchange with your questions and comments at 800-838-3760 anywhere in the region, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. When you talk about helping out kids who need extra help, it's not like the legislature put a gigantic amount of more money in during the session just completed. So how do you help the students who need help without spending less time with the students who are doing okay or better?
Yeah, I think that really has to do with what your systems look like. So we have, and that's working with our educators to really look at systems. So, for example, developmental education is something, well, you know, that's after graduation. But starting to help kids in high school be able to take college courses where you have high school teachers who can really support them, that makes a real difference. They begin to see as early as 10th or 11th grade that I might be able to take a college class. They might not see themselves as college-going students, but once they take the college class, they really feel like they are a college-going student, and they're going to feel much more, like staying at it, graduating, because what's really in sight is the ability to go to college. You know, in early learning, I'm talking about elementary, there's a thing called walk to read, and what that means is if you have if you take your first, second, and third grade teachers and kids walk to the group where they're at their skill level. So if I'm a student who's already a proficient reader, I can walk to a group where I'm reading chapter books as a young child. And if I'm a child who still needs to learn phonics, then I can walk to a group that still needs to learn phonics. And so what you're seeing is that the systems you put in place in the school really make a difference. Some schools are providing summer school for children before kindergarten, first grade, second grade, and third grade. And this is something eventually as a state we would like to invest in across the state, because if you're helping the kids who are behind in summer school, when they get to their classrooms, everybody's at the same place, and then the teacher can really be accelerating everyone as opposed to needing to have six or seven groups. So, you know, it's about that early investment. It's about really working side by side with our educators to say, inside of your schools, whether high schools and accelerating learning or elementary or more CTE that kids want to go to school, let's get these systems in place that are really going to leverage. So it's using our resources effectively, creatively to support kids and allow all students to excel.
We have a couple of callers waiting to talk to Nancy Golden, the Chief Education Officer of the State of Oregon, about the high school graduation rate and efforts to bring it up. Here is Ann and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. I think that a lot of this problem goes back to ballot measure number 5, which cut school funding and gave large landowners like Weyerhaeuser billions and billions of dollars that would have gone into supporting schools. My partner, Bill, has over 25 years of experience as an instructional assistant with special needs students, and he has seen cut after cut after cut in that program. And my question, which evidently your guest can't answer, is what were the graduation rates right before ballot measure 5 as compared with the graduation rates now? Thank you.
Thank you, Ann. Appreciate that. Nancy, you were in the education business in Oregon in 1990, though, I think, and so maybe you can at least give us some anecdotal idea of what you saw.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, investments in education really makes a difference. So, you know, the governor's really committed to that, and we really did invest quite a bit more in education than you know, the previous biennium. You know, I think that you know, I'm really sorry, but I just don't have those historical data. When I was a teacher and stuff like that, I really wasn't aware of tracking education. I was an elementary teacher. So that is data we could get people, but I just don't have it available for me right now.
Is your perception, I mean, what happened with ballot measure 5 for the folks who are or might not have been in Oregon at the time was that property tax rates dropped precipitously over the course of a 5-year ratchet down. So they can't be above $5 per thousand assessed value for schools in the state of Oregon. And the idea was the legislature then brings the money back to the districts without any new revenue coming in, which required cuts to state police and a whole bunch of other higher education primarily.
Oh, yeah.
So, but over the course of 25 years, though, have we seen a great change? I mean, obviously a change in funding, and is there, in your opinion, a change in quality as well?
Well, you know, I think that there's a lot of things about education that really has improved. I mean, I think the research, the promising practices, in the last 25 years have really made a difference. So I know when I was superintendent of Springfield Schools, we put in place something that's called response to intervention that really allows you to respond immediately when a child's falling behind. So I really do think that there were practices that really did improve. And so, you know, in some sense, I think there's been a lot of progress made. I also think there's been a movement towards much more supportive kids in early education. So I do think certainly new resources would be so helpful for us, but I do think there's been a lot of stuff put in place. So I do see us going forward. I do see that districts are making gains all across the state, and we really have exemplary districts that we're looking to really see what are the practices that they've put in place that are really making the difference. So resources matters, but effective and promising practices matter, It also matters that we do some strategic investments. And your history of Measure 5 was really good. The other side of that is that why it came about was certain for an equity reason. Some districts were able to fund their schools much higher, and some were not able to. So we didn't want zip code to determine the kind of education you got. So, you know, the idea is how do we make sure that everybody can get the same resource? How do we get the resource up? And how do we use these other best and promising practices to move us forward?
Nancy Golden, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Chief Education Officer for the state of Oregon. We're talking about graduation rates. Oregon sits at 72%, which is not great, slightly better than the 69% you might have heard reported, but the 72% is for the more recent school year ending in 2014. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions, comments, thoughts, stories, 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Here is Connie in Eugene. Thanks for waiting. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. I have a sort of a perspective that I've been wanting to ask an educator. I'm a part of the baby boomer generation, and we were the first generation really to have access to birth control to control fertility that really, really worked well. And so I know that there are tremendous numbers of us who have been single all of our lives and childless by choice all of our lives, and both men and women, single people as well as people in relationships. And all of the people I know that are in this status have at least a high school, if not a college or even an advanced degree, and they've all chosen not to have children. So I'm wondering, with this group, plus the large numbers of individuals who are in their 20s and 30s who are choosing not to have children, are we changing the demographics or of who is in school? If you have this very high percentage, something like 20% to 30%, who are opting out of having children.
Uh-huh. Okay. Interesting question about demographics. Thanks for that. Appreciate it, Connie.
Yeah, so if we look at demographics, one thing we know is that we are having an increase in poverty across our state. And, of course, you know, when children face food insecurity, when children don't have food, it's very difficult for them to be ready to learn. And also when people are in poverty, there's a lot of stresses that you see in homes and things like that. So, you know, we're seeing an increase in poverty, and we're also seeing an increase in students who English is not their first language. And so all of these require different skill sets, different supports inside of the system that really supports these children to reach the high standards that everybody would have a dream for their children to reach. So, you know, our demographics are different. We also have had tremendous advancement in medicine that has allowed children to survive who might not have. So when you have in some cases, premature babies who are now living. Some of them come to school really healthy, and some of them also have some learning problems that need to be worked with. So the demographics is different, and the kids are wonderful, and it's our job to make sure we create the systems to provide them support.
Adam and Eugene sent in an email. He asks, do homeschoolers get diplomas from local high schools or GEDs? How many students are homeschooled, and is the number increasing?
Homeschoolers do receive, receive diplomas. Again, this is not an area of expertise for me. We certainly could find the answers, but I think it's from their high school. What I know is that if a child is homeschooled, then they have the opportunity to still take activities at their local school. So they can still, do sports. They could attend an art class or something like that. So, I don't have the data available right now to know if homeschooling is increasing. I don't think it is significantly.
One of the major issues, I would think, for schools at any level is that in this age of constant communication and distraction and screen use, how do educators keep students focused on the teacher, focused on the task, able to do the things they need to do, just to make it easier on themselves to get out of high school?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we really need most is that engaging curriculum. You know, if students can connect with the curriculum, if they're really clear about, you know, what are the standards that they're being taught to, and if they're offered multiple options of how do I demonstrate it. You know, I think that engaging curriculum is something that makes a huge difference. And I believe that's one of the reasons we invested so heavily in career technical education in science, technology, engineering, and math. I think students also need to know there's jobs waiting for them once they're done. They want to keep their eye on the prize. And that's why we work so closely with employment to really know where are the jobs. And again, that's partly why we invested so heavily in CTE and STEM.
And so, Nancy, what is the date that was originally set as the target year for getting to 40-40-20, which again, still believes that 100% of Oregon students could graduate with their classes on time?
Yeah, that is 2025. So 40-40-20 by 2025.
So 10 years. Is it a doable thing, you think?
I think it's a doable thing. You know, I think we're putting the infrastructure in place. We're transforming systems. You know, we need to continue to prioritize education, and I've experienced this multiple times in my educational career. When you start putting these systems in place, you know, and it's a ramp up. So in the beginning, you start seeing numbers move. We're beginning to see those numbers move. We believe it will even increase in our next data place. And then it's going to ramp up. It's going to accelerate.
Okay.
The systems are in play.
All right. Nancy Golden is the Chief Education Officer for the State of Oregon. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.